Started the other tour away in Northwest London, Monday 24th of Adar, is it 25th of Adar Sheni, 28th of March, Rabbi Dr. Samuel Landau, Shlita, Tazria, Inside Out. This week's tour away has been sponsored by family Stern and Dunner on the second yard site of the late father and grandfather, Rabuli Stern, Zichron Levracha.
Today,
Reb Zeib and Reb Chaim HaKohen Zichron Levracha.
Good morning.
Morning to you.
Wonderful to be back at Torah Way. I want to begin with three questions about this thing that we encounter in Parshas Tazria, and we will continue to encounter in Parshas Metzora. This year they're separated, as is the Shana Mu'avaret. This thing called Saras. It's a tricky topic, something which takes up a huge amount of space, relatively speaking, within the Torah. Let's begin. First question. What's the middah keneged middah of tzaras? Many of us know the famous statement of Chazal that tzaras is a response to lashon hara. There are other things that the Gemara also says tzaras is a response to. It could be arrogance, haughtiness, stinginess. But the famous maxim that we know is that tzaras is a response to lashon hara, as expressed possibly most dramatically with Aaron and Moshe's sister Miriam, who speaks poorly about Moshe's wife and therefore is afflicted with tzaras. Now, what's the middah keneged middah? Normally the punishment fits the crime. There's a reciprocity between the thing that a person is meted out and the crime that they have committed. So if a person murders, they themselves, their life is forfeit. If a person steals, they have to repay what they stole. Sometimes there's even a fine. If a person damages somebody else, then they have to also make amends for the damages that they wrought. What is the midah keneged midah? What is the, how does the punishment fit the crime when it comes to tzaras? A person spoke poorly about somebody else, and then either the walls of the house, the garments that they wear, or their very skin becomes afflicted with some malady, some dermatological or other disorder. What's the reciprocity of those two? Not only is the question, I think, compounded by the, not only the question is relevant by the actual punishment of tzaras, but even the tahara of tzaras. It's a very strange process. You take one bird, take another bird, one of them you let live, the other one you kill, the one that you kill, you put its blood in a bucket of water, then you dip some hyssop in there, some cedar wood. What's going on with a bit of red string? What's going on with the tahara as well? How is that part of the rehabilitation from tzaras? Many of us will know that there is some middle stage that feels relatively more comfortable in understanding that, and also possibly in the post-COVID era, we're all aware of lockdowns and quarantines. So there is, I think, an understandable spiritual quarantine that when a person speaks lashon hara, when the person is, so to speak, undermining the cohesiveness of society, so then they have to be removed from the group. They have to be sent outside, locked down, quarantined. I'm not sure whether there was an app, you know, to count down the days. But there is an understanding. There we understand that if you're speaking poorly about somebody else, if you're undermining society, so you have to be removed from society for a certain period of time. But is the rest just a hechatimsa to get there? Is the rest just a means to an end? The reason we give you that malady on your skin is order to quarantine you. And the reason we give you this sort of tahara process with the hyssop and the birds, there's also just some way of coming down. The real focus is the quarantine alone. Or maybe there's something more about the whole thing in the whole 360. So that's the first question. How does the punishment and the process fit the crime? Second of all, if we look at the context of tzaras in these parashios, we're not just talking about tzaras. We're also talking about childbirth, azava, balkeri. Childbirth, let's take that as an example. That's a benign process. There doesn't seem to be anything problematic, either morally or physically, about childbirth. It's not a disease, and it's not a moral imperfection. Why are they positioned together in the same parasha? A same parasha of Tahara, We have both childbirth and saras. They seem to be uneasy bedfellows.
Could they just be a korban?
Pardon?
Another issue, because I think it's going to make a and then she has to bring a korban for that.
And it's only compounding the question. So the question was asked, she has to bring a korban after she gives birth. Why should she bring a korban? There's the famous answer in the Gemara that maybe she swore off having relations with her husband after such a traumatic experience. But if we try to go to Pshuta Shemikra, well, why is it that she has to bring a korban, not a sin offering, after giving birth? Last time I checked, it wasn't a sin to have children. There was nothing morally problematic about it. And nevertheless, it seems there is something sinful about Saras, and there is something impure about it. So let's try and understand how those two fit together. And the third question is, how should we relate to this malady called Saras? Is it something we should feel disgusted by? Why might we feel disgusted by it? Well, there's a long-standing misconception that Saras is somehow associated with leprosy. I haven't tracked down was it the King James Bible that for the first time translated, maybe the Septuagint, translated Saras as leprosy, and from then on, there was this mistake that came through. Are we meant to feel disgust? Are we meant to feel that it's a disease? Or is it meant to be like a moral issue? Or is it something more physical? So first question, how does the punishment fit the crime? Second question, why is Saras positioned alongside benign and natural processes like childbirth? And the third question, how should we relate to this? Is it, is it a disease? Is it a moral problem? And in that context of disgust, I want to share with you Social Psychology 101. So back in undergraduate psychology, social psychology was one of the most enjoyable, subjects because it was very physical. They would act out different things. And one of the big topics that social psychology looks at is disgust, how human beings relate to disgust. And there's a researcher called Rosen, who's made his whole career around researching disgust. And he says there's four categories of disgust. Core disgust is when something just makes us feel like moldy food. And there's a reason that moldy food makes you feel disgusted, is because, well, from their sort of perspective, evolutionary wise, it's adaptive, it's useful to find something that might be disadvantageous to one's health disgusting, because then a person's not going to eat moldy food. So core disgust. The next one is animal nature disgust, things that remind us of our own mortality, like death. We might be disgusted by a corpse or things that remind us of death. And here already we have a relationship to Tzaraas, because we know that when Moshe Rabbeinu describes his sister Miriam's Tzaraas, he describes a kemes, that she's like she's dead, that the whiteness of her skin becomes like it's dead. There's also interpersonal disgust, where people feel uncomfortable about someone else. So the classic example there is, you ask someone would they like to wear this shirt. I don't know, don't mind wearing this shirt. You then say, by the way, this used to be Hitler's shirt. Don't know why that shirt, right? By the way, Punkt Verkehr, Lubavitch weddings, right? This used to be the Rebbe's shirt, so you wear the Rebbe's shirt under the... and then the fourth type of disgust is immoral disgust. So, for example, you feel disgusted by a murderer. You feel disgusted by someone who has committed a crime, they violated the divine code. And you sort of wonder, where does Saras feature? Is it an animal nature disgust? Is it about death? Is it about disease? Is it about some sort of leprous-like experience? Or is it about the disgust of a moral position? Is it because this person has done something wrong? They've committed a crime of Lashon Hara. Now let's just sort of debunk one of those old myths about leprosy. By the way, a lot of this material for today will come from Rav Matthias Weinberg. Some will come from Aleph Beta, and Rav David Foreman, and some will come from me. So let's see how much we can get through today. So the first is that Saras has nothing to do with the Mycobacterium leprae, the basis of Hansen's disease known as leprosy. Because leprosy comes from lepros, meaning scaly. And the criteria for clinical identification of Saras include clearly defined dermal and hair discolorations, but they're not present in Hansen's disease. They're not present in leprosy. And none of the scaliness associated with leprosy is described by the Torah. Furthermore, there's no reaction whatever in the Torah to symptoms of disease per se. For example, if a non-Jew is affected by Saras, no problem. They're not Tomei. We don't send them out from the camp. So, and if this was a disease, a highly infectious disease like leprosy, you wouldn't discern whether it was a Jew or a Gentile who had the disease. You'd still want to purify the camp from that presence. A bridegroom, a chosan, doesn't have to present himself a diagnosis lest it upset his wedding day. Again, if you were worried that this was a disease, you would be highly sensitive to the fact that this chosan might infect his kala and the rest of the balei asimcha. Counterintuitively, someone whose whole body is afflicted with tzaraas is tahor, despite the fact that someone with a part of their body afflicted with tzaraas is tameh. Now, if it was a disease, the more disease, the merrier, so to speak. The more that they are afflicted, the more you want to get rid of them. So again, the Torah doesn't seem to relate to this as disease. And third, the sealing of the affected home seems to be unrelated to the quarantine of the disease. So for example, the Gemara tells us that before the Kohen closes up the home, he advises the people in the house, take out all your valuable items. In case, after sealing up the home, it becomes tamei, you have to destroy your grandma's finest crockery. Again, if you're concerned about disease, you're not advising them to save money, because if it could be contaminating, then you would leave it there. Finally, and this is, I think, the raya that Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch uses to debunk the myth of tzaraas being disease, is tzaraas doesn't just affect the physical body, it affects clothing. It affects a house. Last time I checked, about Hansen's disease, leprosy, it's a dermatological disorder. It's not something that affects physical items as well. So tzaraas is something beyond illness. As the Ramban says in this week's parasha, Vayikra, chapter 13, verse 47, he says, Ze einenu b'teva klal. This is not the natural order of things. V'lo hava ba'olam. And neither is the tzaraas of buildings. Rather, the idea here is that when Israel are whole with God, or Karen in English, Hashem's spirit is over them at all times, to conserve the beauty of their bodies, their clothing, and their homes. But if there happens to be a sin and a corruption in one of them, that ugliness will become visible in the flesh or clothing, or housing of that individual, as a sign that Hashem has left him. This is why the entire concept only applies within Eretz Yisrael, which is the legacy of Hashem. As the Pasuk says, V'nasati, one second, when you come to the land of Canaan, which I gave as an inheritance. Okay, it's a special thing within Eretz Yisrael. This is a moral malady. This is about Hashem revealing to us something about who we are. It's a magical message from God. If that's the case, then we have to recast the tumah of tzaraas as entirely associated with immoral behavior. When a person behaves immorally, that's why they become tameh. So if that's the case, then we have a really strong kasha from the bedfellow within this parsha of tzaraas, because as we mentioned at the beginning. Last time I checked, having children wasn't immoral. So if Tumah of Tzaraas is about immorality, it's a magical message from Hashem, and that's the result. So then why is childbirth and the other natural order processes, even something like Nidus, it's normal. It's part of Teva Shel Olam. Why is that also something that confers Tumah? Not only that, but I think that whilst the Ramban has said that this is some magical message from Hashem, that doesn't necessarily discount the possibility that it is disease. Says Rambam in Mishnah Torah Hilchos Tumas Tzaraas at the end of the 16th parak. He says, again, I'll do it in English, but Tzaraas is a concept incorporating a broad range of distinct phenomena. Inyan zeh, what is it? He says, Hatzaraas uvshem ha'amor uvshutvas koilat inyanim harbe she'ein doimin zeh lazeh. There's lots of different parts. Shaharin, Laivan Orha Adam Kari Tzaraas. The whiteness, the discoloration of the skin may be called tzaraas. The loss of certain head or facial hair is called tzaraas. A discoloration of clothing or wool surface may be called tzaraas. Then the Rambam goes on to describe, for one who would so speak, it's a marvel, says the Rambam, it's a marvel and sign to Israel to warn them to stay away from Lashon Hara. For one who would so speak would find the walls of his home discoloring. If he changed his ways, the house would recover. If he maintained his evil ways until the house was destroyed, his leather furnishings would begin to show signs of discoloration. If he changed his ways, they would recover. If he continued on his evil path until the leather was burned, the clothing he wore would begin to discolor. If he repented, they would recover. If he continued his evil until they too were burned, his own skin would discolor and he would become a Metzora, forced to live in lone disgrace, so that he would no longer have the opportunity to share in the conversation of evildoers, which consists of leitanus, cynicism, and lashon hara. It's slightly troubling. On the one hand, Rambam is maintaining the Rambam's position that this is a spiritual malady. And we have that classical progression. First it starts with the house, then with the furnishings, then with the clothing, then with the skin. On the other hand, he says, but actually it's a whole range of symptomology which might involve disease, which might actually feel like something that is closer to a biological or pathological issue. If we go back to the Ramban, he himself, he's not choizer, but he adds a dimension which includes now a physical component. So he says at the end of a long essay on Nagoyim in Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Gimel, the discolored lesions described in the Torah are not in and of themselves tzaras. They are only precursors to tzaras, and medical texts indeed caution us to view certain dermal abnormalities, certain skin abnormalities, just as if they were fully tumorous. The Ramban is saying that tzaras is the sign of a tumor, of a malignancy. And this seems to be the key quality of tzaras. The Ramban later says, if the lesion were just to whiten, to change its color, that's not tzaras. But if it spreads, kifasa hanega, when it spreads, now we have tzaras. And that's the language that the Torah uses, ki tzaras mam eresi. It is a malignant tzaras, it's a tumor. There is something actually pathologically problematic here. Something's physically going wrong. Not necessarily what we thought, or stereotypically the Welt thinks it's leprosy, but maybe something cancerous, something that spreads. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, one message of this mitzvah dealing with tzaras is to teach us to concentrate on how Hashgacha Pratis is individualized to each human being, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows each person's path. We're told to pay close attention to this particular virulent disease and to consider it spawned of sin. Here the Sefer HaChinuch has married together the concept of disease with the concept of chet, that the malignancy which is expressed physically as something cancerous, something like a tumor, is coming about because of sin. So we ask, is it either moral or physical? The answer seems to be, it's both. If that's the case, maybe the question shouldn't be, why do we put something immoral like Lashon Hara alongside something perfectly moral like having children? The question might be, why do we put something cancerous like tzaras alongside something physically normal like childbirth? We've just added a dimension to the stira between tzaras on the one hand and childbirth on the other. Let's consider the words of the Sforno. The Sforno was also a doctor. He doesn't have so much to say on Sefer Vayikra, but here he does speak about tzaras. Here on Perek Yud Gimel, he writes as follows. He says, note that none of the tzaras modalities that are medically recognized appear here in the Parsha, other than hemorrhiphia, alborum, and the netek. I am a doctor, I'm not a medical doctor, so I have no idea what those words refer to in terms of historical 15th century medicine. He says, but the medically catastrophic tzaras, which are system-wide cancers that generally tend to be red or black, are not considered to be impure by the Torah. Only the four whitish discolorations listed in the Torah are seen as representing reproof for sinning. As we're taught in the Gemara, whoever suffers one of these four discolorations is the equivalent of the Mizbeach of Kapara, of the Altar of Atonement. But other cancers listed in medical texts do not originate as a Mizbeach HaKapara, an altar of atonement, they represent either full-scale degeneration or result of improper diet or other environmental factors and have no connection to tumah whatsoever. The Sforno says there's three categories of disease. There is simply bad lifestyle. There's bad lifestyle. There's diseases that come about because we're not healthy enough. That's one style of disease. We're not talking about that when it comes to tzaraos. There's another type of disease, which is catastrophic failure. The red and the black tzaraos that he describes. Some sort of overwhelming malignancy that is obvious to everybody that the person, there's overarching failure of the person. And that's not tzaraos either. The middle tzaraos, the middle type of disease that Sforno says tzaraos is something a bit more under the surface. It's the creeping cancer that doesn't affect the whole organism in one go, but starts to infect one system and then metastasizes to another and then to another. That is the disease that tzaraos seems to represent according to Sforno. And indeed, those types of maladies, those types of things, are much more problematic. Consider the person who has a broken leg, or even has broken every bone in their body, chas v'shalom. It's much less scary than the person who has got that creeping brain tumour or the metastatic pancreatic cancer, lo aleinu. That's much more scary. Consider the news about the war in Ukraine. It's much easier to deal with Russian bombs than the news that came out yesterday about Russian agents infiltrating behind enemy lines. The malignant drip of evil is much more problematic than the overarching face-to-face problem that we can tackle head-on. So tumah in our parsha doesn't seem to be a relationship to head-on sin. It's not like the whole organism is bad. It's that subtle veneer underneath. It's the subtlety underneath the skin that seems to be representing evil. And let's think about this now. Why is it? And by the way, this experience of disease, this experience of this gentle reminder of our mortality, is something that we say every day. Galoy v'yadua, lifnei chisei chvaydecho, shim yepasechecha mehen, o yisusemecha mehen, yevshal yiskayim v'la'am elefanecho. Hashem, you know, whilst I stand here not reveling in the majesty of the fact that my body functions as it does, I know that if one tiny thing would be off sync, off kilter, the whole piece, the whole show falls apart. And that's some of the niflos of modim that we say every day. Some of the perushim on the siddur tell us that the things that we're saying thank you for. Those million infinitesimal miracles of the mitochondria of a cell, of the reproductive nature of our bodies, of the fact that our bodies function as they are. The reason that we have bodies that decay but also repair is because after we were in the Garden of Eden and then were ejected from that place, life became subject to our own procreation, to our own systems. When Adam and Chava had Cain and Havel, the Gemara in Sanhedrin describes two went to bed and four came out. There was no process of life. The fact that we now go through a process of childbirth, of building that child, of then the tremulous, possibly dangerous moment of childbirth itself, is only a result of coming out of the garden and into a world where sin exists. Baruch Hashem, we were blessed with a baby girl 2 weeks ago today. Thank you very much. And there was a moment when our little daughter came out, and it was a water birth and it was warm. She didn't take that first gasping breath. And so the midwife runs over and starts rubbing her with a towel, gets another towel, starts rubbing her. Just to make sure that she can gasp and clear her lungs. At that point, it's at that very vulnerable moment, it becomes clear how things that we take for granted should not always be taken for granted. Baruch Hashem, she's very well. We named her Chana. But that vulnerability to our own physical world, that's what Sarah seems to represent. This whole parasha, therefore, is about looking at the vulnerability of our physical existence. Now, that can be in the context of childbirth, but it can also look in the context of a different type of physical existence too, where our physical existence can become diseased. Let's think about why it is that a person would speak Lashon Hara. I have to tell you, it's quite interesting. When I used to go on the train, you'd go on the train and people would always be fidgeting. There would never be a time that they could just sit there in the pleasure of their own thoughts. Either they'd be picking up a metro or on their phone, reading a book, trying to do something. Always so busy to do things. Often, I don't think we're always so comfortable living deeply within ourselves. If we were, we would be comfortable with our own company. What happens, I think, when we speak Lashon Hara, is that rather than living deeply, being comfortable within our own skin, we look outwards, look to others. It's a much easier place to be comparing to someone else, to looking at Yenam, to be caring, to looking what they're doing, how they're living their life, reading the newspaper, thinking about other people rather than thinking deeply about myself. It's a superficial existence. And Hashem says it's diseased. And he says, look, I'm going to take the surface of your homes. The surface of your homes, the things that you put around you, those representations. We all sort of use our homes as a means to demonstrate who we are. You think about when you invite your guests around for Shabbos. You want to put out your best china, your white tablecloth, the nice silver. I'm not always sure if it's so much, but if it's just a family meal, with all the trimmings, all the different parts. But when there's someone else, we want to show off our finery. You're living on the outside, on the surface, and it's diseased. So the surface of the house gets this affliction. If we still don't wake up to that message, as Rambam says in Mishneh Torah, so then your furnishings still don't wake up to the message, then your clothing. If you still don't wake up to the message, your very skin, the very thing that you put on your surface, that will also become diseased. And it's malignant. Why? Because it spreads like a tumour. The more that we live in that superficial world, the more that we speak to others in that superficial way, the more that others speak to us and speak then on and on. This is why Tzaraas has the three-way sin. The speaker, the listener, and the onlooker. Because in that unholy trinity, there is then a passing on of the message, a passing on of the malignancy. We're so used as a society to things just bumbling along. Just as we're so used to our bodies just bumbling along as an individual, that when there's a sickness underneath, sometimes it becomes difficult to detect. It becomes difficult to find that moral scourge. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a sign that is both physical and moral, to show that there is a need to wake up. We ask three questions at the beginning of Torah Way today. How should we relate to this as a moral disease or as a physical disease? The answer seems to be both. That the physical disease of malignancy, of a tumour that spreads, matches the moral disease of a spreading superficiality. We're not comfortable living deeply within ourselves. We're always trying to be superficial and spreading that scourge with others. Why, we ask, does this sit alongside a seemingly natural process of birth? It's because both Tzaraas and birth and all the other bodily functions of these two parashios scratch under the skin of what happened following the Garden of Eden. Scratch under the sin of how evil is manifest in its most malignant form in ways that are difficult to obviously see. There's a vulnerability in life, and there's a vulnerability in morality. And that vulnerability is the Tzad HaShava Shebehen, the fragility of life, the fragility of morality. And finally, how does the punishment fit the crime. What's the midah keneged midah? We didn't quite get into the tahara, but at least the experience of tzaras. When you live superficially, says Hashem, when you live always thinking about someone else and not yourself, I will show you that living superficially is diseased. It might even be disgusting. Then you will get out of the encampment. You will be in quarantine. And there will be no one to look at other than yourself. Look deeply, look wisely, and then come back more whole. May it be His will that we should all look deeply, look wisely, and be whole. Good morning.